You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning. I'm Luis Sainz, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is Dr. Richard Pineda. Dr. Pineda is the director of the Sam Donaldson Center for Communication Studies. He's also one of our tenured professors here in the Communication Department, and he's going to talk a little bit about the Sam Donaldson Center, but also some interesting classes that Dr. Pineda Richard has taught in the past year, and we're going to talk a little bit about one of the upcoming classes as well. Dr. Pineda, thank you very much for being with us here today, and congratulations on being officially appointed as a director.
Well, thank you, Louis. I appreciate it.
You know, Sam Donaldson has been here before, and we've talked about the center, but some people may not be quite familiar with the center itself. You want to kind of bring us up to speed on that?
Sure. The center was established in 2002, and the center, of course, is named for Sam, one of the outstanding alums from our department. The program was really set up to provide enrichment opportunities not only for faculty but for students. And so up through this point, the program has done a number of different initiatives to bring speakers onto campus, to provide workshops and outreach for some of our university students as well as high school students, and to also facilitate workshops for professionals on issues related to media and the border. I think that the program itself has been great, and under the directorship of Dean Patricia Witherspoon, there's been quite a few important milestones that have been set. Of course, the biggest is having Sam as part of our students' lives. He comes, as you know, very often to talk to students. I was lucky enough to have him last academic term serve as a co-faculty member for my class. So he helped team teach my politics and media class. He was in campus for three visits. One, of course, people saw a lot about in the news, which was his major centennial lecture. But then I had him in class with my 20-person seminar for three sessions. And so a great experience for our students to be able to talk about the election, to talk about politics, and to talk about personality with somebody who not only has had his pulse on that particular community, but also understands the skills necessary for a lot of these students who want to enter media to be able to start honing their craft.
Talking about politics and the fact that, you know, of course, we just went through a presidential election and so did Mexico. And one of the big issues facing both administrations is immigration. And you recently had a forum on immigration. Was that sponsored through the Sam Donaldson Center?
It was a program that was sponsored ostensibly through the Department of Sociology and Anthropology and Joe Hayden. But the department was also one of the active sponsors, and I was on the panel. You know, I think that these conversations about immigration, we're starting to move the needle a little bit after the election, and most recently the Gang of Eight, the senators on both sides of the aisle in Washington have started really talking about making substantial immigration reform. Our own local congressman, Beto O'Rourke, has talked a little bit about the nature of homeland security. He's raising, I think, perhaps one of the most important questions that is not really being talked about either in Austin or Washington, D.C., which is, you know, how do we define a secure border and how do we actually talk about that in relationship to policy? And I think he makes a great point, one which I talked a little bit about on the panel, which is this idea that it's an easy term to throw around, secure border and locking down the border, but very often there's not really a sense of what that means. And I think that that's a really important issue to study from a communication perspective. If we're going to use this as the marching orders for immigration, at least in the near future, I think it's a fair conversation to really talk about the parameters of what that means. And so from my perspective, one of the important issues is defining that particular term or that concept and really establishing some frameworks for how we talk about that. Because I think otherwise it becomes a pretty elusive goal. And I think it's always very, very easy for politicians to say, you know, we want secure borders as a talking point and then to really walk away from that without really making any contribution.
Now, what about one of these issues has come up a lot, and some people say it's stereotyping the fact. And in fact, this was brought up by one of the bankers at the economic summit that was held not too long ago here, the fact that we have to get out of our minds as Republicans and as Democrats that all immigrants are crooks. And also the fact that not all immigrants are Mexicans. There are people coming from all over the world. And sometimes you'll have a story about an immigrant, well, like the movie that's coming out about the Russian immigrant, and they talk about how, you know, they're crossing so many bridges. They have to do so much stuff to get over here. But Jen, when they talk about the Mexican immigrant, they're talking about the fact that there may be some crookster, as this right. banker said.
Right. Well, I mean, I think one of the issues that's important to think about is that when we talk about immigration in the United States, it tends to be something very easy to demonize, and it tends to also be a little bit racialized. And so when we tend to talk about immigration, the metaphors and the images that we see in the news tend to really focus on images from the United States southern border with Mexico. They tend to reify or to make solid these sort of images of floods of people. You know, there's quite a bit of stock footage that's used in news stories that focuses on Southern California and even parts of Texas where you still see people running the border. You know, the truth of the matter is that not only with existing border control policy has that changed, but I mean all of the data that we're seeing out of Washington, both from the government and from nonpartisan immigration research, indicates that immigration has really started to dip. So in some ways, I think we're still using those images, and I think they're powerful images, especially when you're trying to conjure the fear of undocumented immigration. And so you see people like physically in the act of breaking the law by coming through the fence or jumping the line. But more to the point, I think that it feeds concern or paranoia about the relationship between these undocumented immigrants that are coming in and their place once they're in society. I think rightfully so, the Gang of Eight, the senators that started talking about reform, have pointed to the fact that immigrants in this country, not only do we have a fairly large number of immigrants, but that it's also incredibly difficult to isolate and to deport those immigrants, which means that you've got to really deal with that, whether it's amnesty, as it's being talked about, or some sort of a qualitative change to our current policy, because otherwise what you have is de facto amnesty. And I think that's a point that a lot of people forget. It's very easy to say, well, we're going to get rid of all these criminals, using their language. The truth of the matter is that's not going to happen. So you've got to figure out ways to make sense of not only the folks that are here, but to provide either pathways to citizenship or pathways to return to countries. One of the undercovered conversations is that a lot of the people, a lot of undocumented immigrants that are in the United States right now have stayed here because their fear of the ratcheted up border control policy has left them in a position where they don't want to go home because they don't want to risk getting caught and arrested and deported forcefully. So they end up staying where they're at. And I think that one of the things, nobody is really advocating for an open border, but I do think that there's some policies that need to be thought about and enacted before the midterm elections to try to speed up or to create some sort of rational basis for this immigration policy.
In the past, it was mainly because of the economy, the fact that immigrants were coming over here and, of course, to make a better life for themselves. And some of them would actually come over here and send money home and then go home. They wouldn't stay here. But since the drug cartels and the violence started, a lot of people started leaving because of fear. In your opinion, has the new Mexican president done anything, or do you see him moving in certain direction to?
I think the interesting thing with the Peña Nieto government right now is that they really still are at the stage of getting their sea legs. And I think there are a number of pressing issues internally in the country that I think his government is dealing with. And border control policy is interesting because I think that they are also making adjustments and trying to feel out what life will be like with a Secretary of State who may not necessarily be as focused on Latin America. And so with the push for Senator Kerry to be the new Secretary of State, I think that there is going to be a seismic change in terms of foreign policy and the focus of foreign policy. I mean, Kerry is just about to or has already started his first world tour, and noticeably absent is stops in Latin America, or at least with major leaders. And so, you know, it's going to shift the focus, I think, of what the U.S. State Department is doing. I mean, it's impossible to avoid Mexico, for sure. But I think that the Mexican government will react in some ways to how Secretary Kerry is going to deal with foreign policy, and I think they'll make adjustments based on that. I mean, the government as a whole has been fairly limited in their commentary about the immigration proposal suggested by the Gang of Eight and even the next stage of proposals. I suspect that the Mexican government wants to see how much of a commitment there is to actually taking these policy changes and to decide if the U.S. government is really serious about this, and then the Mexican government will make their adjustments as necessary. But you have to remember that Peña Nieto is dealing not only with economic issues, but he's also dealing with the internal struggle tied to the drug war. So he is still, in terms of setting up his his agenda and really defining his presidency is still, I think, a way off from making that change. And I think that that's going to be, you know, there's already criticism in Mexico. If you read the Mexican press coming out of Mexico City, you know that there's a lot of criticism already that Peña Nieto is moving too slowly on a number of issues, and drug control policy is one for sure.
The New York Times ran an article, I believe it was this weekend, about Mexico and trade and the fact that they're moving up. The fact that, you know, they're our number one trading partner, but the fact that they're now going up and competing with China and Brazil and some other countries. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think, you know, there's two thoughts that I have. One is actually just about that story, which I thought was revelatory in the sense that the New York Times was willing to put that much effort into a story about Mexico. So I think in one way it's a great sign. People in the United States and the readers of the New York Times are concerned about Mexico, and they're not concerned in an alarmist fashion. They're concerned because they see this economic development happening and they want to know how Mexico will change or alter its economic position. The second point is about that transition, and I think that it's important to see the reality of global trade is certainly having an impact on the way that the Mexican government and Mexican business is thinking about their role, at least in the near future. So, you know, we're now decades past the NAFTA agreement. There is a sense of both the positive and the negative of NAFTA for Canada, the United States, and Mexico. But I think in some ways that's been the push to really think about how Mexico realigns some of its economic bases. And you know, there's an interesting transition. So as NAFTA started to come into effect and you saw the rise of the maquila factory system in places like Juarez and in other border areas, it seemed like that was at least a short-term infusion of economic development and capital. It didn't take very long, though, before environmental regulations by the Mexican government and concern about the nature of some of these economies associated with maquilas started to have an impact so that a lot of those companies then moved on to China. And in some ways, it literally sort of follows this path. So the same kind of economic issues the United States saw in the 80s, losing a lot of this business, losing a lot of major manufacturing, now Mexico is dealing with as well. And so I think there's a real sense of having to change and adjust their economy. There's a recognition that economy is no longer as viable, and there needs to be a change and a shift to a very different set of economic priorities. Time will tell as to whether or not those are effective or not. I mean, I think the truth is that in the sort of post-NAFTA world, the benefits of where trade move between Canada, the United States, and Mexico are a good example of some of the limitations of thinking. So in other words, this was sort of often hailed as the a marker for globalization. But in some ways, what I think is really interesting is that you didn't really get the same kind of movement that I think people expected. And it really just sort of encapsulated those economies. It didn't necessarily open them up to broader global trade.
It's hard to believe that it's we're already in March. And my next question would be, is there anything else that you would like to talk about that perhaps is coming up via the Sam Donaldson Center for the rest of the semester?
Sure. Summer? Well, the thing that I'm very excited about is that in May, in the first week of May, we'll be hosting UTEP alum, outstanding alumni, Alfredo Corchado, and he'll be coming to campus to give a centennial lecture. The premise of the centennial lecture is going to be based on his new upcoming book, so it's very exciting. I'm looking forward to that as the first event that I'll get to shepherd through the Donaldson Center. I'm also beginning the process of establishing an advisory board for the center, and this is very important to me because in addition to some of the things that the center has done in the past, I'd like to move forward a couple of very important benchmarks. And the first, of course, is the elevation and maintenance of Sam Donaldson's legacy. That's a focus that I'm very determined to really make some strides on as we finish this academic year and into the summer. I'd also like to begin the movement on establishing a speaker series in Sam's name. And my hope is that we can elevate that speaker series to the same level that the centennial lectures have on campus, that we would be able to bring in pivotal figures in journalism, pivotal figures in media business to be able to talk to our students and to the community. So I'm working on those goals as my focus for the remainder of the semester. And I'm also getting ready for the fall already in our classes. And so I'll be teaching a media and politics class as a special seminar. And the hope is that we'll be able to get some special guests into that class. I'm not quite far along on locking that down, so I can't quite spell out who I'm hoping to get in. But the hope is that very much like the seminar that I had last semester, we'll have somebody to come in and guest lecture over the course of the semester. So we'll see how that goes. But there's a lot of things that I would like to accomplish. I mean, you know, I've spoken to you about this before and on air with you. I mean, I believe so much in our program, and the Donaldson Center is such a unique part of that. And this is an exciting opportunity, something that I'm thrilled to be able to do. I'm very happy to be able to move the center forward. I've had a great tutelage under Dean Witherspoon, and so I'm looking forward to this. I mean, this is an exciting challenge for me in terms of my career because you're really starting to – you know, I'm starting to see the significance of balancing my academic interest with a broader entree into the public sphere. So I think people are very interested in the community and what we do, and I think it's an exciting way to be able to showcase some of that work.
Well, Richard, thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Dr. Richard Pineda. Dr. Pineda is the director of the Sam Donaldson Center for Communication Studies here on campus. He's also a professor, tenured professor here in the Communication Department. Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Rue. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Luis Sanz.